One segment in housing that does seem to be holding up relatively well is luxury real estate. Sotheby's International, which operates in 1,100 offices in more than 80 countries, just releasing its 2024 Luxury Outlook report, pinpointing trends and the hot markets to watch.
On any given day of the week, we have 40 to 50,000 homes for sale in 84 countries around the world. And every single one of them is someone's personal home. And it's highly emotional. The problem that Google is facing with a Gen Z client now beginning a search query on TikTok as opposed to on a Google search engine. That requires us to figure out how do we show up on different platforms in an authentic way for that generation of consumers without totally abandoning all of the brand equity that has been built. As part of our goal setting strategy, I've used an expression which is a culture of constant course correction. The concept of this is if we make our business, if we make our marketing offerings, if we make our technology platforms 1 degree better every day, at the end of the year, we will have had substantive impact.
Welcome back to Marketing Trends. This is your host, Jeremy Bergeron, as always. And today you are in for a real treat. With us in the virtual studio is a titan in the realm of high-end real estate, Brad Nelson, the Chief Marketing Officer at Sotheby's International Realty. Brad isn't just at the top of his game. He's redefining the game. He masterminds marketing strategies that merge luxury with technology, making Sotheby's International Realty not just a leader, but a legend in real estate marketing. If you're looking to learn from the best about transforming potential into prominence, stick around for this conversation because Brad's insights could be the gold that you need. Let's dive in. Brad, welcome.
Thanks for having me. And the next time I'm having a down day, I'm going to give you a call, Jeremy. I appreciate the introduction.
Let's go. I'll be your hype man. Brad, when your name dropped into my email box a while back, I was like, this is incredible because I have a personal list of like dream brands that I want to connect with. And I've had the privilege of speaking with many. But when I saw Brad Nelson, Sotheby's International Realty, I was really excited. I'm incredibly impressed and super grateful that you're here. I want to know just right off the jump, like what's in your headspace, what's in your mind space around the brand, around marketing? Like what's taking up some margin in your head around? Is it strategy? What part of the business are you looking at? Give us a little click into what you're focusing on these days.
I think the two major areas of focus that I spend a lot of time thinking about right now, first and foremost, is the changing consumer demographics. So millennials are the largest generational cohort in the history of at least the United States, and they're entering prime income earning years. At the same time, we have an intergenerational transfer of wealth, which is, you know, really just starting last year in 2023, but is ramping up in a major way. And what that means is a lot of millennials overnight have more financial capacity to purchase a luxury home than they did before through inheritance. And that's just a very fast change in the type of client who is active in our segment of the market. So really trying to figure out the segmentation of how are we connecting with different generations of clients, perhaps even in the same transaction, because you may have a seller who's downsizing and you may have a millennial who's upgrading. And how does a brand really have an emotional connection with both of those segments at the same time because they're a part of the same transaction?
I'm so curious about just that example you said. You've got potentially two different generations either selling or purchasing. How do you meet each one? There's nuance there. And then you have to consider preferences and behaviors from both and the insights from both. So that's incredible. How do you do that? Take us into like how is that being done? That's really interesting.
I mean, I think from a creative perspective, we have an interesting position in the marketplace. Sotheby's was established in 1744. They created the real estate business nearly 50 years ago. So we have this trust and familiarity, what I would say, with a seasoned client in our space. And we are constantly looking for new ways to connect with the new audience. And so I saw some data yesterday that showed the problem that Google is facing with a Gen Z client now beginning a search query on TikTok as opposed to on a Google search engine. And that really requires us to figure out how do we show up on different platforms in an authentic way for that generation of consumers without totally abandoning all of the brand equity that has been built. And so it's that balance of having the freedom to experiment on new platforms and to show up on them in an authentic way for that audience. Ultimately, you have to go to where your customers are. You can't try to lead them to you. And so striking that balance of, you know, the consistency for decades versus the freedom to experiment on new platforms.
This idea of encouraging experimentation and innovation, is that something that you've been doing early on in your career? Has that obviously more important now as we're in 2024 and everything's moving fast? But where did that get introduced? Because I've definitely spoken to some CMOs that are more bullish on innovation and experimentation. Where does that come from? I love that.
I think it's definitely part of our DNA. There is a fascinating article about when our firm was founded. It was written in the New York Times in the 1970s. And it was talking about our, you know, aggressive public relations department, et cetera. From the very beginning, we've always been trying to think about how could we do things differently than the norm. I think something else from my personal experience. So I've been at the brand for 14 years at this point. I started off in a very junior marketing role in one of our offices in Florida. And every single day when you are on the front lines of any business, you're constantly getting feedback. And so, you know, sometimes people perceive feedback as a negative. It's as if someone was complaining. And I always just tried to really try to get a thicker skin and be curious about that feedback and say, all right, you're offering a solution that might not be the solution, but let me peel back the layers of the onion and get to the root problem. Because if there's a root problem that we can improve and solve, we have the ability to, you know, improve our business at scale. So listening to our agents on the front line is something where, honestly, most of our best ideas come from.
You said something really key there, which is this is often what I pick up on sometimes with folks, and I pick it up with you, is this. There's a relationship with emotional intelligence. I wholeheartedly don't believe you can be at the level that you are and take things personally. I think, like you said, to your point about feedback and like moving things forward. So you're able to, like you said, look at feedback in a very more objective way and probably giving and being a demand for that feedback. I think that's really, really important. And I think the role of a CMO comes with its fair share of criticism, right? And setbacks.
What are you talking about?
Yeah, right. And look, you've been there almost 15 years. If you blink, you'll be there 20 years if that's the game plan. It's like you've also had to, you know, navigate inside of one growing and evolving brand on almost a 20-year span and stay there. So how do you handle criticism and taking things personally or not in such a high-profile position?
So I try to have empathy for wherever criticism is coming from. And I'll give you an example. Like if I was working at Porsche, yes, there has been blood, sweat, and tears put into the design and engineering and manufacturing of a product. But at the end of the day, they're building multiple units of the same product. In our business, on any given day of the week, we have 40 to 50,000 homes for sale in 84 countries around the world. And every single one of them is someone's personal home. And it's highly emotional. And as a result of that, when we're getting criticism, I find that it is often a redirect from criticism that one of our frontline advisors is receiving from their end client. And so understanding that first and foremost helps you just deal with it more pragmatically as opposed to personally. It's okay, this is a game of telephone where they're hearing feedback from someone and they're trying to be helpful in passing it along. And the second piece is to try to divorce the emotion or even to better understand the emotion. Because again, understanding the stressful position that that client is in and how personal their individual home is, the more we appreciate that sensitivity in every transaction and every campaign, the more we can prevent it from happening in the future.
I already know that you care a lot about the role, the industry. You care about the human that you like. I already know that. I've seen some of your previous clips. I've watched some of your stuff, and you're also a human being, and you're also navigating like a really interesting space. So I really appreciate that. And as you think about how that is cultivated in your team now and your leaders, right? Because certainly if you're leading that way, I'm sure it's being modeled and they're watching. How do you cultivate that with your leaders, pushing them to fail fast and pushing them to innovate? Is that something you're very conscious of in your kind of day-to-day interaction and development of your leaders?
Absolutely. And as part of our goal setting strategy, I've used an expression, which is a culture of constant course correction. The concept of this is if we make our marketing offerings, if we make our technology platforms 1 degree better every day, at the end of the year, we will have had substantive impact. If we try to say we need to blow everything up and start from scratch and, build a new campaign that's not inspired by the past, build a new tech platform that doesn't learn from our previous experiences and data, so forth and so on, we are going to get stuck in decision paralysis of trying to make something perfect. And by the time it finally launches, it will be outdated. So, one relevant example would be there's a fascinating trend in media happening right now of what I would consider the transition from publishers to content and really self-publishing. And similarly, I was reading some data in Axios yesterday that talked about the number of Gen Z clients who are more likely to follow a journalist themselves than they are to follow the publication that they report for.
Wow.
And so there's so many shifts constantly happening, and you have to have the freedom to experiment with a handful of things. And when you double click on the thing that really, really works, then you have to build that into your week in, week out plan and, turn that into a sustainable platform that you can execute against.
Do you feel like you always have to come back with, when you're beginning thinking about your strategic plan, right? You're thinking about the brand, its massive reach. This is a huge organization moving very quickly. Do you feel as an executive like, okay, I've got to bring something even better this year? Do you feel like it's like this kind of always the dancing show and you've got to come even more and more? Is that like how you bring it to the table where you go off with the team, come back and present to the ELT, hey, this year we're going this way? Like, do you feel like it's got to keep being that? Or do you feel like you just have a tool belt you pull from?
I constantly feel that pressure. So the reality of, we have our internal conference coming up in September and I'm thinking about a 20-minute keynote presentation on stage 7 days a week, because at the end of the day, every single person in our organization has a choice in where they work, in what real estate brand they are affiliated with. And I very, very sincerely want each person to feel like they are in the best spot, that they have chosen a platform that is best for their business. So that pressure is incredibly real. What I would say is kind of general business advice is if there's something big and overwhelming, figure out how to break it up into smaller pieces so that you not only are less stressed by the totality of it, but you also get the dopamine hits when you complete something along that way and you get the feeling of momentum. So one thing that our team kind of stumbled into by accident, so prior to the pandemic, we'd have these massive global conferences and they're amazing. And that was really the deadline that our internal team worked around because those were the big drops, the big reveals. During the pandemic, we started needing to find a new way to communicate with our internal stakeholders. And so we started producing a monthly video drop. And they're very short. They're 5 to 6 minutes. They have three pieces of information from the brand. It is very generically titled, What's New? Kind of just very simple, What's New? what I found was that had a transformational impact about how our team plans, because instead of these annual calendars and these deadlines that seem months and months away, now we have a deadline every 30 days. And back to the concept of constant course correction, we don't need to build something from scratch every 18 months, but if we make something better every 30 days, and we're listening to feedback from those that we serve when we're making those prioritization decisions, we can be more impactful.
I love that, because I could see how it could be quite overwhelming if you're considering this massive industry and this massive brand and all the people and all the things. But if you start to break that down, like, you can actually accomplish a lot, which I love that. Is there anything that you believe about marketing that few would agree with you on? Do you zig right when most marketing execs go left? Like, is there like a perspective that you have that you feel like is not maybe broadly accepted?
I think that it is very easy in any category to get obsessed with what your direct competitors are doing. And I really try to block out that noise as much as possible and look at other brands that have similar customer demographics in other categories and look to be inspired by creativity outside of our sector rather than being obsessed with a competitive landscape. Because if you fall into the trap of becoming obsessed with your direct competitors, then I think your brand stops being unique and suddenly everyone starts to look and sound the same.
That's huge. And that also confirms a theory that we've seen play out, is that the executive leaders that explore other industries and have a diverse perspective, they don't just stay in their silo of, this is the segment I'm in and this is what we do. The ones that look across the aisle and see what other industries, like you said, with similar demographics are doing and then taking that into the playbook, incredible. I love your answer. What do you see happening in the marketing space right now that you think many are missing or not seeing or completely avoiding?
I think that there was such a transformation in the media mix to digital channels these past years, decade plus, where, you know, the majority of the spend has migrated into purely digital channels. I do think that the pending changes on cookie technology and how are you targeting customers is shifting pretty radically. I think that there is a significant need and return to partner directly with first-party publishers as opposed to third-party data exchanges, et cetera, because you need to consider what editorial content do the customers I want to reach care about and make sure that you're adjacent to that, as opposed to relying solely on algorithms to put your advertising everywhere based on cookie retargeting, et cetera. So I think that piece of technology that is changing in response to consumer privacy laws has significant downstream effects on how we approach media purchasing and planning. The second thing that I would say is your own database of customers. You just can't invest enough in that. When I think of so many successful transactions that we have, they've been originated, or the lead generation, to use marketing parlance, came from a past client who had a great experience with us. So I think more than anything else, if you focus just on making sure that your existing clients that you have and are working with today are happy, feel well served, feel an emotional connection with you, that can be the most powerful channel of all.
Your content is at the heart of what you do. It connects your company to others, teaches them, guides them, and inspires them. But creating, managing, and editing content at scale is often very chaotic and difficult. Empower your content teams with Brightspot Content Management System, made specifically for marketers and corporate communications leaders. No more waiting for a developer to have to piece things together. Put the power to create and deliver powerful yet complex digital experiences into the hands of your marketers with a comprehensive suite of ready-to-use tools and functionality. Bring a bright spot to your tech stack, your customers, your team, with the Brightspot Content Management System. Visit brightspot.com/marketing trends to learn more.
I saw that Sotheby's
International Realty just recently launched that brand ad campaign, Nothing Compares to What's Next. Can you double click into how that came to life, talking about the media mix and things like that? But how did that kind of be birthed, and what did you put into place to make it successful?
So back in 2020, we were confronting a challenge with a brand, which is we have become famous for selling the most expensive things in the world. So, you know, we were the first company to ever sell a home for $100 million in the history of the world. The amount of price records that we've set in various countries never ceases to amaze me. But the downside consequence of that is our core client, if they didn't live in a $100 million house, they were worried about, are we going to be focused on them? Are they going to be our priority? And so we almost entirely eradicated the word luxury from our marketing and advertising messages. And we stopped talking about price category. And we refocused everything on the commitment of service that we offer to our clients. So that was a seismic shift in our brand positioning.
That's
it wasn't
big.
About price. It was about quality of service, the level of service. And then obviously 2020, 2021, we were incredibly fortunate. While so many other categories struggled during the pandemic, and that's not lost on us, but it was such a heightened transactional volume. And then a lot of things in the world changed. So number one, a lot of people had bought a house in 2020 and 2021. Interest rates had gone up dramatically. The available inventory of homes for sale, if you were looking for a new house, had dwindled because so much of that pent-up demand had been consumed in 20 and 21. And the result of that was so many people just felt like it was not a good time to move. They were like, oh, you know, I really need an extra bedroom, but it's just not a good time because my interest rate's this. And, you know, we actually went out and started looking and we bid on 5 houses and we didn't get any of them. And we're just so exhausted by it all. We've given up. And the reality is, I don't think anybody moves because it's fun. Like, it's this really grueling emotional process. But you move because something has changed in your life to where a different home could better meet the needs of your family or your lifestyle. And so the concept of Nothing Compares to What's Next, we just wanted to give people permission to dream about that. Not even if you were transacting today, but starting to think about, okay, do you need more space? Do you need less space? And just getting them in the mindset of it's okay to start to think about this again.
Did you get involved in any of the creative process or, you know, brainstorming ideas? Like, do you ever get into those, some of those meetings and drive some of the creative?
Absolutely. And in fact, we're working on our new campaign, which will launch in September right now. It's, you know, I think a lot of times in management structures, you deal with people and budgets and HR and those types of issues. And when you actually get to step back and say, hey, how can we be more effective at marketing an individual property? And how do we not just do it one time for a particular seller, but how can we execute against this all around the world every day? That's the really, really fun part for me. And I love to participate.
I love it. Okay. I want to click into this on your dance with AI as an executive. And I want to hear your perspective, and we can go wherever you want. On your Instagram, you had a link tree and a couple of, like, there were some real estate reports and some cool things. But then I also noticed you had a link tree to real estate ChatGPT prompts. And Brad, I've had many, many executives on this show that are leading marketing at an extremely high level, just like you. But it's been rare to find someone that's been that bullish on AI. There's been a couple that we can go there and talk about it, but I want to know just your thoughts high level on it. And I also want to know how you're using it in your role as an executive. Do you use ChatGPT? If so, how? And then click into kind of the real estate industry and how you're using it in marketing and things like that.
So at our most recent internal conference, we had Indra Nooyi as our keynote speaker. And Indra, for those of you who are not familiar with her name by reputation, is the former chairwoman and CEO of PepsiCo, one of the largest businesses in the world. And we asked Indra about AI in our fireside chat, and it was her prediction that artificial intelligence, large language models, machine learning were going to create the most technologically disruptive moment in our lifetime in the next 5 to 10 years. And she was really candid with us. She said, you can't ignore this. You need to figure out how to take a course to understand the principles of these technologies. this is where you need to be investing, because if you just pretend it doesn't exist, you are going to get left behind. It is going to change every industry as we know it. And so we took that to heart in a few ways. The first way that we took it to heart was we immediately actually hired a professor and an expert in artificial intelligence from the Wharton School at the University of Pennsylvania to teach our team internally, help us understand, you know, the underlying technology. And we actually made that available, not just to our internal audience, but we made it available publicly to our entire industry. The second thing that we did was we began to experiment with it ourselves. Large language models are obviously the most accessible and usable applications of AI today for a layman, if you will, as opposed to a computer scientist. And so we started to think about what are all of the tasks that we do on a daily basis in marketing a property, and how could we use AI to act as more of a copywriting assistant or a general administrative assistant to empower our people to produce work of a higher quality and faster. And so that's where you see some of the experiments that we documented into sample prompts for ChatGPT. My mantra to our internal sales force has been, this isn't something that you have to master. And you shouldn't believe anyone who says they're the world's foremost expert on this, because I think we're all learning together. But you do need to begin to experiment with it. And there is no monopoly on good ideas. So when you find an incredible application that's very valuable to you, don't keep it to yourself. Share that back with our Sotheby's International Realty community so that we can, you know, continue to make that information widely available.
I love it. Can you talk about how you use it in your, just in your role? How do you use it in your day-to-day, if at all? How do you use ChatGPT or things of that nature?
I think the two things that I personally use it for, as opposed to what our team in the field or our agents use it for on a daily basis, first and foremost is, you know, I'll write a long-winded email. I'll copy and paste it into Microsoft Copilot, which is our iteration of ChatGPT internally. And I will say, you know, please edit the email below for clarity and brevity. At the end of reading this email, I want the audience of fill in the blank to do or feel fill in the blank. And oftentimes I will have written an email, you know, that is a full page long, and it will very succinctly help me compress that into four sentences. It totally does the right job. I need to tweak a few words, but I find that my internal communication, I can have more clarity by using a large language model in that way. The second thing that I do is, if I have a really complex presentation that I want to make, I will do, you know, my own internal data download of all the various topics that I would want to cover, all of the information I'd want to share, and I'll use a tool like ChatGPT to help me best organize that information so that if I'm delivering a presentation, I can have, you know, really logical chapters of content. I can make the various data points connect to one another. It's very helpful to me in terms of organization, and also random research questions. You know, we were working on a home in Washington, D.C. that had been owned by Jacqueline Kennedy. It was actually the property that she purchased after she had to leave the White House following the president's assassination. And it was landmarked. So the history of this property was remarkable. We found a 200 plus page application to the National Park Service as part of the, you know, National Register of Historic Places and Landmarks. And we were able to use a tool like that to help us summarize the information much faster.
Wow.
So you can use it to get smart quicker.
You also said like so many cool things. One was that you guys hired, was it one person from Wharton and was it another person you hired, or just the one professor from Wharton that came in and educated people?
Exactly. Dr. Ethan Malek, he's a professor at Wharton, and you know, we hired him to do an hour deep dive, and it was very valuable and just kind of blew your mind to even understand what might be coming 6 months, 1 year down the road, so that you're already thinking about what might be to come, even if it's not accessible today.
Did you have an early resistance to GPT and things? Were you like, wow, this is going to change the game? And did you dive in, or were you kind of pausing and assessing, considering all your responsibility and the impact? How was your, when it first got on your radar in a meaningful way, what was your initial reaction to it? Clearly now you're all over the tech, but
I think that I was really enthusiastic about it personally from the beginning, but one of the core attributes of Sotheby's International Realty is we're known for our discretion. And so I did have a lot of questions about what type of information can we interact with a large language model with to ensure, you know, if we're working on a pitch, so we're trying to win a piece of business that, you know, someone is going to sell their home. We deal with a lot of celebrities. We deal with a lot of executives. We deal with royal families. I mean, the list goes on and on. So while you might think, oh, let me use a tool like ChatGPT to help me brainstorm or kickstart marketing ideas for a property like this one, there was real concerns about, okay, well, what is the privacy of that data and who might it be visible to? And does this actually pierce our reputation of discretion, et cetera? So those were core questions and issues that we had to solve for to ensure that we could use tools like this while not violating our clients' confidentiality.
Excellent. What about blockchain and smart contracts? I mean, I know blockchain tech promises, you know, to add transparency and the speed to real estate transactions. How close are we seeing more adoption of blockchain and smart contracts at Sotheby's International Realty?
Well, I don't think that's a question for Sotheby's International Realty. I think that's a question for the local governments that record deeds. That's really something where any broker, ourselves included, are at the hands of the local jurisdiction of how real estate is transacted and recorded. What I do think you just called out, though, was an important word, which is speed. And that's the outcome that the client cares about. They want the transaction to be less cumbersome. They want it to be faster. And so one of the things that we're constantly looking for is, how do we enhance that process? How do we make it faster? You break it down into bigger pieces. If you want to make a real estate transaction faster, you know, we can think about the advent of electronic signatures with applications like DocuSign that allow us to, you know, I've had clients execute contracts while they were on boats in the middle of the Caribbean. So that's a fascinating example of how a transaction becomes faster and more convenient. The other thing that we're beginning to see now is, even there's a wonderful platform that we've invested in called Notarize. And this allows you to verify your identity over webcams in states that allow for electronic notaries. And there's no more needing to go to a bank or to an attorney's office to execute some of these legal documents. So, you know, trying to make that speed of the transaction faster in every single piece where we have that control.
Anything in that VR, AR space? I know it's becoming a lot more prevalent in like showcasing properties. Are you seeing any of these technologies in the space that you're in? Or is the team using any VR, AR stuff?
Absolutely. So we were actually the first major brand to support virtual reality to showcase listings. And I remember at the time when we issued the press release, there was an article, you know, Sotheby's International Realty, this old world brand, beats Zillow and beats Realtor.com to virtual reality in the category. So it's something that we've supported since the very beginning of the technology. I can give you countless examples of properties that we've sold for $10, $20, $30 million that were totally sight unseen.
Wow.
Where the buyer never saw them in person, and they're living in them now as their full-time homes. This isn't a, you know, mystery safety deposit box in the sky type of situation. And I believe that, you know, giving access to as much visibility about the property so that people can shop where and how they feel like is incredibly important.
Oh, that's awesome. There's been a couple things I've picked on is Sotheby's International Realty is definitely paying attention to things that are coming around the corner, and they're jumping in big ways and doing meaningful things to make sure you're really on the cutting edge and not the bleeding edge. So phenomenal.
A lot of the places where we sell really beautiful properties are incredibly hard to get to. And that's what makes them attractive to people. They want to buy something where they can get away from it all. But if something's hard to get to, if a new piece of inventory comes on the market, it's not like you can pop to the open house on Saturday afternoon to go see it. So the video film content, the photography, the floor plans, the virtual reality, all of those things together really help a client better size up a property. And then they can determine if they want to get on a plane and go see it in person.
Love it. Okay, let's get into some fun lightning round questions. Are you ready to shift gears and have some fun? Okay, so these are lightning rounds, so try to answer, you know, quick as you can. Answer from the heart, the gut, and we'll double-click in. The first one is, what is your least favorite business buzzword or marketing buzzword?
Impressions.
Ooh, no one said that one. What is the best team building exercise you've ever employed, and do you still use it?
Go to dinner with someone and invite someone to dinner at your home. I think if you break bread with somebody, it changes your relationship, and I use it all the time.
I love it. I love it. What was the first thing you thought about this morning?
I have a terribly bad habit of the second I wake up, I look at my email, I look at Teams, I look at my text messages, I see what I missed the night before. Part of a global business means something's always hitting in your inbox. And I think a lot of your reputation is dependent on how fast you respond. And so looking at my email is definitely the first thing I do when I wake up.
Wow. Okay. If you could use marketing to send a message to the entire world, if you could plaster billboards all over the world, what would it be?
My mom always had an expression, you know, she grew up in a time in the world where women did not have even close to equal opportunity as men in the workforce. And there was a common mantra in our house, which is a woman can do anything that a man can do. And I think the message that I would want to broadcast on billboards all around the world is just like, you can do anything you want. It's not even about gender, but it's, you know, you can do anything you want. Just you have to get up and decide to do it.
What is a movie quote or a song lyric that best describes Brad Nelson's management style?
Ooh, I'm terrible on memory of movies and songs, but I'm from Virginia. So there's a quote from Thomas Jefferson that always really stuck out at me. It used to be on the menu at a restaurant that I went to a lot in DC. And it said, in matters of principle, stand like a rock. In matters of style, swim with the current. And what that really means to me is like, hey, your character is your character, but that's the part that needs to never change. Everything else, like whatever's fashionable of the day, go with. So I try to think about that with our team. Like, what is the ethics? What is our character? Everything else, let's have fun.
What is one popular thing or activity you wish you enjoyed more?
Golf. I hate it.
What would be the title of Brad Nelson's unauthorized biography?
The Perfect Amount of Pretense.
Oh, do you prefer watching television week by week or binge watching seasons all at once or not at all? Or where are you at in that equation?
So I have not had cable since I left my parents' home, and I'm definitely not a TV guy. I prefer to watch TV on an airplane on a flight that's leaving late at night when your brain is so dead you can't possibly do any more work.
What is your way of just decompressing and disconnecting? What do you like to do? Like walk, run, sit quiet, listen to hip hop? What's your play?
Fitness, exercise is definitely the one thing that gives my mind a break. I'm a pretty addicted follower of Barry's Bootcamp, working out with my buddy Jimmy Nicholas, going for a long bike ride, anything like that.
What is the best business advice you've ever received?
Get one thing done every day. It is very easy to talk about strategy. It's very easy to talk about what you want to do. It's very easy to judge what other people are doing. It's very hard to get one thing done every day.
If you were to devote the rest of your life to philanthropy, what cause would you choose?
I think it would have to be homelessness. I just talked about how I would plaster on billboards that you can do anything you want. But the reality is people have a different starting point in terms of advantages or disadvantages. As a brand, we have a partnership where we've raised seven-figure sums for a nonprofit organization called New Story that's doing some incredible work to end global homelessness. But I've also been really inspired by what some local governments are doing. There was an episode of the New York Times podcast, The Daily, a few months ago talking about what the city of Houston's doing. And they had a very powerful argument that if you want to help those less fortunate, until they have a roof over their head, they're in a total free fall. And anything else you do may have limited impact. And so that would be the arena where I'd want to focus.
And finally, what is on your bucket list, Lef? What items are on your either business bucket list or personal bucket list or both?
I think on my personal bucket list, I actually lost my mom about 6 weeks ago. And that is kind of a seismic moment in life. I was really fortunate and feel very grateful that I had a great mom. And so one of the things I realized was after we got through the end of her life and the celebration of her life and all of those logistics, that I was behind on everything else and life just got really busy. And so I think a bucket list item for me that I'm prioritizing the next few months is really to just create some space to grieve. but making sure that I don't just, you know, jump back onto the hamster wheel. And then on the business bucket list, I think if you are fortunate enough to work at a great brand, more than anything else, we talked about the pressure of delivering more. Your greatest responsibility is to protect it. And so on the business bucket list, something that we're in the middle of right now is doing an audit of all of our different platforms and segments to say, how consistent are we from each one? And in the places where we've given ourselves permission to experiment and find new ways to connect with our clients, now looking at the entire ecosystem, looking at how they all correlate and interact with one another, and really fine tuning how they complement one another so that we're definitely, again, giving ourselves freedom to experiment, but that we're ultimately protecting the brand.
Incredible. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, Brad Nelson, Chief Marketing Officer, Sotheby's International Realty. Brad, incredible conversation. Such an honor to be in your presence, to connect with you, to hear just bits and pieces of your journey. So shout out to Sotheby's International Realty. And Brad, have an amazing rest of your day.
Thanks for having me. It was a blast.
You have 8 seconds to make a connection or risk a click away onto the next topic. The difference lies in your ability to deliver relevant experiences to your audience across devices and across channels. But delivering on a really great experience is impossible without the right people and the right technology. You've got the right people, but your technology choices will make or break someone's experience with your brand. At the center of gravity of your digital experience, Brightspot Content Management System can deliver relevant content, personalized experiences, and cross-channel synergies to create unforgettable brand experiences so you can be a bright spot in someone's day. Head over to brightspot.com/marketing trends to find out right now. From global crisis to hunger relief efforts, the messages you deliver save lives, inform important decision-making, and help keep communities safe and sound. The speed and scale of your content needs to be delivered faster and on a much larger scale. Brightspot Content Management System has supported some of the world's largest brands to communicate on a global scale. From Johnson & Johnson sharing critical information with their customers, to helping Whole Foods tell their brand story to a global audience. Brightspot is designed to handle rapid iteration and personalized messages to those you care about most. Learn more at brightspot.com/marketing trends.